Hello, welcome to Hey It Gets Better, the podcast all about the ups and downs of life and how ultimately it gets better. I'm your host, Katie Watson. Today, I'm joined by Sean Ruane. Sean is the CEO and the founder of Mind Data. Mind Data is a platform that's been built to improve and modernize the therapy experience by utilizing client-driven insights. In this episode, we talk about Sean's experience with depression and how it's led to him building Mind Data. And we also look at practical ways that you can look after your mental health. I absolutely loved recording this episode and I got a lot of insights from Sean. So I really hope that you enjoy it too. So without further ado, let's get cracking. Hey, Sean, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. How are you?
Hi, Katie. I'm very well. Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me on. I'm really excited for this, but I'm very well. Thanks. Yeah, very good.
Amazing. So we're going to jump straight into it, which is the same question I ask everyone. And it is a big question, but you know, what is your Hey, It Gets Better story?
So I'll try and do this in little chunks so that, you know, you're just not getting a one-way street of me talking. So my Hey, It Gets Better story, probably it has its roots in depression and suicidal depression, and things really do get better, thankfully. So I guess to start that, we seem to rewind back to 2014, actually. So bear with me, because I know parts of this story will get dark, but it's not all a dark story, right? But I'm the eldest of three boys, and my middle brother had a girlfriend called Holly, and they met when they were 10 years of age. Real childhood sweethearts. And they dated all throughout their early teens, late teens. They had their 10th anniversary at like 20. And so Holly, I guess to some degree, became a little bit of an adopted sister to me, to some degree. You know, I saw her grow up. And in the early part of 2014, she didn't feel very well. She had some headaches and stuff. And long story short, it turned out to be a stage 4 glioblastoma, which is a brain tumor, cancer, and it was terminal. And so she unfortunately passed away by the November of that year, 2014. She was only 21. And I think because I hadn't had any, for a better word, training of death, I was still fortunate enough to have all of my grandparents alive. So I'd kind of survived 23 odd years without really any family deaths. Now that was obviously a real benefit. I mean, how lucky I was to be in that situation. The trade-off is that this really hit me with all orders of magnitude. So I think that was a catalyst for me doing the classic male thing of being strong and bearing my emotions. The reason I did that was I wanted to be there for my mum, who had somewhat lost a bit of her adopted daughter. Obviously for my brother, who had been through an unbelievably traumatic psychologically time. I mean, it's not like he lost his girlfriend in a car crash. Heartbreaking as that would be, I think there's something else particularly painful of seeing someone gradually pass away. I mean, heartbreaking. And I couldn't fix this for my brother. I just couldn't do it. And so bearing my emotions to be there for them seemed to work for 3 months. And I think in March of 2015, things started to warp and change. But I'll take a pause there. But that's really where my Hey, It Gets Better story started with, hey, I don't think this is going to get better, back in 2015. So that's its roots.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, you know, one of those stories that you never plan on something like that happening. And even the way you tell the story, you concentrate a lot about the impact that's happened on other people. And I guess that gives a sense of like who you are as a person, but it also that those times it's really easy to focus on everyone else, and we need to focus on ourselves, because when we don't, like, things happen and it's really tough.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Katie, actually. And not about me, but you're absolutely right that, like, most people, it's very easy to focus on the impact on others. And I think we'll come back to this point, but I do think that there is a sense of commonality of people that have suffered from severe depression, anxiety, suicidal depression, where you do really put other people's emotions first, to the point where you feel a burden on others. I certainly did. And again, we'll come on to that. But you're absolutely right. I think that we should put more of an emphasis on looking after ourselves. Absolutely.
So how did you get from that point to where you are now? Because right now you are the founder of Mind Data. You are essentially like revolutionizing kind of the mental health space and the therapy space. How did you get from that, like where you were there, to here?
Thank you. I don't know about revolutionizing. I mean, it'd be amazing if you do. That would be very cool. But thank you. So I think that as bad as depression became for me, and suicidal depression kind of gripped hold of me in 2015, I went to go see a counsellor called Betty at university. I was so lucky that I think I missed that bit out, but I was just starting university in January 2015, so right in the middle of that. And I think that kind of compounded things, big life changes, you know, new chapter, just everything going on. But I was lucky to be at university because you have student welfare. So, you know, I didn't have to be on an NHS waiting list. God knows as a student, I couldn't afford private therapy. But what a godsend it was to have student welfare on your doorstep. So I went to see Betty for on and off for 18 months, I'd say. And she genuinely saved and changed my life. I know that term gets thrown around a lot, but she did. She saved my life, literally. During that time, I saw, I think it was a TED talk possibly, of a US Marine that had attempted to commit suicide in Iraq in 2004 or 5 or something. Anyway, his headline was, and his life mantra was, his life's purpose was greater than his circumstances. And it was something that really kind of hit me between the eyes when I was suicidal and depressed, because I thought, no one's ever spoken to me about purpose. I mean, Gandhi has a purpose. Not me. I mean, maybe 1 in 100 people have spoken about life goals. I mean, life goals, not just get a house, get a job, get married. I mean, meaningful life goals kind of thing. No one really had ever asked me those questions. So I chose a life's purpose of improving the mental health of 1 million people worldwide, having no idea how I'd ever achieve it, if I could ever achieve it. But it would have been my anchor to something bigger than me, should I ever get lost in my circumstances that ever, should it ever lead me to become depressed again. So basically, Mind Data, 6 years later, is my way of combining my love and passion of technology and startups, and overlapping that with attempting to improve the mental well-being of 1 million people, based on my experience of going through therapy for 2 years.
I think that's really interesting and quite something that a lot of people we can learn from is how you, the idea of like purpose and having something to essentially live for. Because it is so easy to get kind of distracted by all this materialistic stuff, to those kind of goals, which I think I've spoken on a few episodes about, like they're like status markers, you know, buying the house, you can do all that, you can get the big job, you can live that picture perfect Instagram worthy life, and not actually feel happy.
Totally.
But we also like, what is the solution for this though? And the idea of having a purpose, again, it's like not something we're really taught in school, and probably because it's a lot more complicated than just like waking up one day being like, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna change the world. It's actually something I think that comes from like a lot of soul searching and a lot of connecting with yourself and working out what actually matters to you. So, you know, was this kind of experience something that happened to you like over a long period of time, or did you just have that like, kind of epiphany?
Do you know what? I think it was more of an epiphany, if anything, if I had to choose one or the other. I don't think it was necessarily something that took me weeks, months, years to mull over and create this purpose. I think that it probably has its roots in a longer period, you know, this extended period of depression and suicidal depression, breakdown of relationships, isolation from friends. Just, I ruined my life. I mean, it's a horrible chapter of my life. And I think that the roots of it were extended, But honestly, there was almost like an on and off switch of, oh yeah, I can choose something bigger than me. I mean, I should be hanging my hat on that. And I think that, you know, that talk from that that Marine, that really spoke to me. I wrote it on my whiteboard in my bedroom at university. And it was that purpose, you know, greater than sign, circumstances. And it just stayed there for years. And it was an epiphany, I think. I think it was a moment of just clarity. Yeah. And just on that note of happiness and materialistic, I totally agree that I think, you know, that dopamine hit that we chase is a very, it's never fulfilled, right? It's an addict in itself, dopamine. So, you know, the moment that you fulfill that by getting a new car, a new house, it's not satisfied. It says, great, what more can we do to get more of this? So it's kind of like you're chasing infinity in that sense, just constantly looking for this thing that you'll never really satisfy that. But a purpose is something greater than that. I mean, I'm not a neuroscientist or anything like that, so I don't know what other chemical it would be, but you're certainly not really getting like a dopamine hit from chasing your purpose. I'm sure there are little bits of it along the way, but it's something more sustainable over a long period, I'd say, than the house, the car, the watch, whatever, the holiday home.
If you could go back and not go through that experience, would you?
No, I wouldn't. No, I've often said and maybe convinced myself that I was gifted depression, because I wouldn't be the person I am today. Mind data wouldn't exist. I wouldn't have this life mission. And so if I'm happy where I am and where I'm going, I have to accept that everything that happened had to have happened. But in some weird way, if I could have gone through that and not experienced the level of pain and loss and suffering, yes, naturally I wish I could have gone without that. But again, you can't pick and choose. All of that, and the pain, the suffering, the breakup of the relationship, everything, heartbreakingly, had to happen to get me to where I am. So it's a very weird mix, but I think I'd have to say that I'd have to ride that storm again. I would, yeah.
I think that's an interesting word, you know, storm, because it does feel like a storm, I think, anything you go through on that level. But storms do always pass. And I think, I guess that's this whole concept is where the idea of the podcast does come from, is the fact that you will probably, like, I don't know the stats, I hate numbers, but statistically speaking, everyone listening here will probably go through something in their life that feels like a storm or hurricane, like you cannot get your head above water. And I think that the importance of talking about the fact that this stuff does pass is so important, and it's not something that does get spoke about enough. I think we do live in a time where there's a lot of quick fixes, a lot of condensing kind of therapy into a TikTok video or a quote, and actually time is so powerful when it comes to this stuff.
I totally agree, absolutely. I think it's true with anything with mental health related. I mean, it is an ongoing relationship with your mental health. You don't go through depression, get cured by depression, and that's it. Well, I remember my chat. It's just not the way it works, unfortunately. You know, can will probably slip back into depression at some point, or versions of depression. You know, I mean, every day, I mean, mental health is just a spectrum. I was naive enough to believe that you're either depressed or you're not, you know, and you switch. And that's not true. You know, when you have a bad day and you're stressed, one could argue that, well, I'm kind of like 3% depressed, maybe. You know, you're leaning into that negative set of emotions that day, and then you pull back, and, you know, you don't just wake up one day and say, I'm now depressed and I'm not now. We're constantly ebbing and flowing, and the relationship we have with our mental health is a lifelong, not battle, because it's not battle necessarily, relationship that has its ups and downs. So it is a lifelong commitment to keeping on top of your mental health, I'd say.
I completely agree. I think, especially when with depression, I I like having experience as well. Like, I kind of thought it was literally like, you have that image of what it is. It just means you can't get out of bed. And I quite naively thought you would know. You would wake up and you would know. You were like, I am depressed now. You know it. But actually, it really does kind of happen over time, and it happens quite subconsciously until you hit quite a low point. And like you said, it is something you can also be depressed and have a good day. And it's this whole language around how we talk about mental health needs to evolve to not be a yes or no, but a kind of, like you said, like it's a relationship, it's a scale. And I think that the kind of mood tracking you do with Mind Data really helps to understand that level of how mental health actually works.
Yeah, thanks, Katie. I mean, on the Mind Data thing, it's one of the features that I wanted to build was this self-awareness piece, right? Tracking over time, little bits each day, and then zooming out over 3 months, 6 months, a year, and seeing your ebbs and flows, and is your trajectory up or down? And it's the wider piece rather than the daily piece, if you will. I've also never thought about that when you said you can't have a good day when you're depressed. I mean, what a beautiful way of wording it. That's so true. Absolutely. Just as you can be in the happiest chapter of your life and have an absolutely terrible day. I mean, if it works that way, you're absolutely right. It can work the other way. I completely agree. There's also something, I've got a personal frustration with the label of depression. When you think of like physical objects, let's say, and you depress a button, you know, something is depressed, you can visualize it as literally being down, right? When something is depressed, you depress something in and it dips. And I think that what that does is it kind of creates this association with this. Anything above the line is positive emotions and happy and excitement and love. Anything below is sadness, anxiety, frustration, crying, whatever it is. And that's what I used to think depression was as well. Like, I'm really sad. And I think we need a new label for it, because for me, it was like absenteeism. I was voidism, I don't know, something. But it was, I had no emotions. And emotions are what makes us human. And depression robs us of that. And I wasn't sad. I wish I was sad. I'd be experiencing an emotion. To live in a world where you are void of all of your human emotions, frustration, anxiety, excitement, happy, sadness, when that gets wiped out, which is what depression does, it is a hell on earth. It's something that's very difficult to deal with. So I just wanted to pick that up because, as you said, like, I think we need to start changing the conversation around mental health, depression, and I think that the way we view it is slightly misconstrued to being very upset, very sad. It's not up and down, it's left and right. I mean, we are moving this way, not downwards. It is just moving off the spectrum of emotions until you're left with nothing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think then when we hopefully change the language around this, you can kind of identify it yourself. And I think, because that's another part I really want to like pick up on, is that like when you kind of understand that you have a relationship with mental health, it doesn't then mean that relationship is going to be great going forward. And like any relationship, you know, you have to constantly check in on it, and actually, you know, you have to improve it, you have to put work into it. So, you know, how do you kind of put work into your mental health right now?
I mean, I think there are a few things. I think the first thing I'll say, just to lay the foundations of this, is the one thing that therapy taught me, and I know that everyone's experience with therapy and counselling is completely subjective, but for me, it was the ability of self-awareness. It was becoming conscious of my emotions. Before therapy, I'd passively experienced my emotions and never recognised them. I knew I'd had a bad day, but I'd never, ever in my life, ever listed the types of emotions that I'd felt during that bad day. Suddenly you sit in a chair with a therapist, and Betty says, "And how did that make you feel? Tell me the emotions that you went through. What were you feeling in your body?" And you think, what? Like, what a weird skill this is. So I think the first thing that therapy helped me do, and I would always champion therapy, obviously, but even other at-home tools or techniques to just be more aware of your emotions. Just call them out, write them down. What is it that you're feeling? And, you know, 99% of people don't do that. So that's the first thing, just that. But in terms of actual kind of tools, things that I do, I write a daily gratitude list. Yes, I know it sounds really hippie and out there, but I think that it's one of those things that really kind of anchors me to something that is objectively true, right? I mean, if someone ever said, are you grateful for your mum? Are you grateful for your job? Whatever. Most people would say, yeah, obviously. But then if you said, great, when was the last time you were consciously grateful? Like when did you say to your mum, I'm grateful that I have you around? Or something like that. Again, 99.9% of people say, that's a good point, actually. I've never actually done that. I've just taken it for granted that I know I am. So I think for me, anchoring myself in a list of 10 things and people that I'm grateful for having just keeps me grounded of choosing what to focus on. I think there was one day on my journey to depression where that day, let's say it's, you know, Thursday, 17th of November, 2014. I don't know when that day was. There was that day where 51% of my thoughts were negative and I was focused on what I didn't have, who wasn't there. And, you know, and started to ignore all of the positives, right? And I think that that was a real, like, you know, changing point for me, where I just found it that, you know, just focusing on what you have, because they're true, that's the most important thing you can do, I think. That's that gratitude list really helps me, I think. So that's number two. And three was advice I got from a GP. So when I was depressed, the GP said, did you want me to put you on antidepressants? And I said, well, in an ideal world, nothing against them. I would rather not have them if I can, purely because I was a little bit worried about what if I get depressed again in the future? And I'm like, where's my pills? Where's my pills? Now, that's probably a very naive view, to be fair. I'm sure that's not how it works. But that was my view of it at the time, being a naive 25-year-old that was depressed at the time. I think, well, if my brain can get me out of it, can my brain get me out of it? Maybe, maybe not, but let's try. And he said, if you exercise for 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, it'll have the same effect physiologically as two antidepressant pills. And I was like, oh, I guess I can just try that then. You know, I'll just go to the gym and row for 30 minutes. I'm not a good runner, very bad on a bike. So I'll just sit down, I can pull a rope. But I'll just try that on like the lightest like resistance. And I'll just do that. I can't embarrass myself that way. And that's just what I did. And I don't think that's a silver bullet at all. But there is this thing called a runner's high, right? And you can measure like, you know, the decrease in negative toxins in your blood and, you know, the release of positive hormones. And I think that with the gratitude list, anchoring myself to who and what, exercising regularly, and eating as good as I can. You know, I'm definitely not an expert in eating well, but if I have a weekend of fast food, which I do regularly, fast food, maybe some alcohol, not exercising, yep, I'll definitely have on Mind Data, you'll see it like a dip on Monday, Tuesday, of an average feeling of just feeling a little bit low, just the edge of things. So I think from a practical sense, they're the things that I try to keep on top of where I can, not perfect, but where I can daily.
What I love is that none of those things are really revolutionary.
No.
It's no. Really not like a massive kind of, this is will fix everything, but it's stuff that once you start doing and once you start building those habits in, will have a drastic impact, I think, on your life. And I also think as well, like, it's kind of like creating those habits. Also, you're probably not going to be able to maintain them 100% all of the time, because it's definitely a trap I've fallen into where I've missed that day doing journaling and then I've given up journaling, or I would skip the gym one day and then that's it. Like, but it's kind of like being kind to yourself. Forgive yourself for the days you can't do it. There's going to be nights out. There's going to be McDonald's and like bad food decisions. Forgive yourself for those, but focus on what you can do in the present and what And I think as well, recognizing that it makes you feel better is really important. So you know that gratitude makes you feel better. Even, you know, like you said, like no matter like how, like if it sounds quite hippie, it's like what makes you feel better. And like I have it on like a list on my phone of things that make me, that I love and things that make me feel better. And anytime I feel rubbish, I just look at that list and it's like listen to country music. Yeah. Got the cringiest country playlist, but it makes me feel great. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things, this stuff doesn't have to be revolutionary. It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be something that takes a whole like month to build. It's actually really simple.
I love your idea of your go-to positive, happy things that you have. Country music, amazing. I mean, it could be a curated playlist on YouTube that I made, actually. I never added to it very much. It was funny videos. You know, we've all got those videos where you just watch it years later and it still gets you, you know, whatever it is. And I've made a few of those as well. Granted, I don't look at that very often at all, but it does exist. And having those little things that you can go back to just to take the edge off things, I love that. Yeah.
I think that's one thing I feel like it just has to be simple. We live in a world where we overcomplicate everything. Like, it doesn't have to be difficult. Just get outside, eat good food, see people, socialize with people. It doesn't have to be difficult. And I think when you showed me my data, one thing I loved about it was the simplicity. And I think that's the thing with mental health, is keeping it simple is honestly one of the best things.
I totally agree, absolutely. And I definitely, from a mind data perspective, kind of like that Venn diagram of where technology and my tools of mental health kind of overlapped, where simplicity is the key to so many things. And even if you're building a piece of technology, if I take my mental health hat off and put my tech founder hat on, simple. Try to find one thing, just do it well, really simply. Do not overcomplicate things. And if that's true in technology for usability, it's got to be true for our daily habits, right? Just do that. Absolutely. Overcomplicating things will work for a week, 10 days, a month, maybe, if you're really dedicated. But eventually, you're absolutely right. It will die off. So yeah, simple tools, whatever they are, and habits.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been really great. I'm just going to end with the last question that I ask everybody, which is, you know, what would you say to someone who just doesn't feel like it gets better? They don't have any hope right now. They don't know what to do. What would you say to that person?
Well, I would say it does get better, but you know what? They're not going to care about that. Absolutely. I wouldn't have done anything. I wouldn't see if you'd say that. You don't know. I mean, an endless sea of hopelessness, it feels, at least. And one analogy that is true is that we've all had like times where we've been physically unwell, with a cold, a flu, for example. And one thing that's true every time that we get ill is that when you're in bed and you can't remember what it was like to just breathe through your nose, or, you know, whatever it was, or not feel ill if you've got a virus, in that moment, it's almost like, I can't remember what it felt like to be well, effectively. But you do get better. And so if you are going through a mental related illness, try to go back to your physical illnesses that you've had. And you think, yeah, actually, do you know what? You can get through this, and you do. And so if I know that's true with my body, it will be true for my mind as well. So that's number one. I know you said one thing, but the other thing, sorry, there's one more thing I'd add to that is I wish someone had told me that you are not a burden to those people around you. So just remind yourself that if you have people around you that love you in various different ways, but in love with your partner, love your family, love your best friends, it's a bilateral relationship. They want to be there for you. And I personally denied those loved ones around me by not wanting to be a burden to them, but I wasn't opening up to them, giving them the opportunity to support me, as self-centered as that sounds. So you are not a burden. So just open up to them if you can in your own little way, and a problem shared is a problem halved, and that's so true. Break the isolation by just breaking that ice to someone and saying, I know them very well.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, it would mean the world to me if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcast or just share the podcast with your friends. I hope you have an absolutely amazing week. And remember, hey, it gets better.